Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts, live from Mobile Podcast Command, spending the weekend in Duluth at the Republican State Convention. And I'm going to give you a little slice of what it felt like to be here and give you some heartfelt analysis of what went down here on the Republican side of the fence in podcast 728. Well, I'm pretty excited because I'm working with a new company called Relia Fund. They've been in business for 20 years, so they're not a new company. They're new to me. Relia Fund Payment Processors, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, reliafund.com. I'm going to give you a toll-free number in a second here to call them. If you are developing websites or you're developing back office stuff or e-commerce stuff for businesses, listen up. If you are a small business, a medium-sized business, or a medium-sized business getting ready to grow, listen up. This message is for you. Relia Fund is a payment processor that's been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades. Yes, they can handle your credit card processes. Yes, they can give you a great rate. Yes, they can work with other payment processors. If you are doing any of the stuff that I'm talking about, developing an e-commerce website, developing back office stuff for businesses, getting your business squared away in terms of payment processing, then you want to talk to Relia Fund because you will deal with actual human beings at reliafund.com. No long-term contracts. They're secure. They're technology-focused. Here's the number, 866-243-5040, 866-243-5040. Ask for Greg Lowry or Kevin Hill, or check them out online at reliafund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D, or click on that banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Well, I had hoped to go to the state DFL convention after this convention, the Minnesota GOP convention in Duluth, but I found out too late that the DFL held their convention on the same day as this convention, the DFL down in Rochester, and the Republicans up in Duluth. Kind of a strange turnabout for Republicans and Democrats. Usually it's the Democrats up in the northern part of the state and the Republicans in the southern. But I want to also say that the reason is I thought if I went to the DFL convention that I would see things with fresh eyes because I have not been to a Democrat convention, so I thought that would be fun. But alas, it was not in the cards. This is not going to be a blow-by-blow account. I did not attend every single minute and record every single minute of the convention. There were a lot of people running around this convention listening to rumors and tweeting out what was going to happen next and why things were happening the way that they were. One of the things I've learned after 25 years of going to these things is that people run up and tell you things all the time that don't happen. Tweeting what somebody says is going to happen seems to me to be rather silly. If you want to know what it's like and if you want to know what's going on here and how it happens, go get elected delegate and come to one of these next time around and you will experience what it is. I have come to a lot of these, and the people who are doing this deserve to be appreciated for the time that they've sacrificed as well as the money they've sacrificed to be part of this, starting at the BPOU level and working their way up through the caucuses and the county conventions and now the state conventions. At every step of the way, people have made speeches, that they've been nominated, there have been debates about endorsements, debates about resolutions and so on. Some people were delegated to their congressional districts, and all the congressional candidates are here as well. But this convention is to nominate statewide races, two Senate candidates and a gubernatorial candidate, lieutenant governor, and of course, attorney general. So this is the business of this convention, as well as resolutions. People here are referred to as Republican Party activists. I think that's a bit too kind to them. They don't strike me as particularly activists. What is at stake here is to get out of the convention with an endorsement because primaries are going to follow in August, and the state Republicans did not want to walk out of this hall today without endorsing a candidate. More about that later. As I said, there was nothing new said by anyone at this convention running for office, starting with Karen Housley, a Senate candidate, all the way down to some of the other speeches, which I heard at various times, not just by candidates.
Hey, Bob. How are you?
As we came to Saturday afternoon, voting for governor went three ballots, The specter of former Governor Tim Pawlenty and his agents trolling the crowd, according to some, with the intention of pushing for a no-endorsement vote, which would mean the convention would not be able to muster at least 60% of the vote for the front-running gubernatorial candidate. Before the third ballot results could be announced, Andy Parrish, one of the Republican candidates for governor, bowed out, and then Mary Giuliani, the mayor of Woodbury, suddenly bowed out, and the chair asked the convention to stand to endorse Jeff Johnson unanimously. We never got the results of the third ballot. In the end, rather than let the delegates work through the process, no matter how long it took, the leadership intervened, and they also voted to accept a committee recommendation on the resolutions, so no debate on the resolutions as well. And the quote-unquote activists just sat down and did what they were told. They stood for acclamation. They stood to agree because they just wanted to go home. So I think describing these people as plucky activists is a bridge too far, to tell you the truth. This ended the convention as delegates streamed out of the hall after voting for Hennepin County Commissioner Jeff Johnson as the endorsed candidate for governor by standing. So I want to give you a little bit of a flavor of some of the things that happened at the convention. And I'm going to give you a few excerpts of speeches, starting with Karen Housley, who is one of the Senate candidates, Bob Anderson, who was another candidate for the Senate who was not endorsed. Who else is in here? I've got some different people here that gave various speeches. There was also a speech about something called the RFL, the Republican Farm Labor Group, which was started by a bunch of legislators, and I just thought that was something that people should hear about. You might think it's funny, you might think it's stupid, but it was something that got a lot of response, a lot of buttons at this convention with people walking around that said Republican Farm Labor Party. And then, of course, a little bit of discussion about the Tim Pawlenty people, which I refer to as the Headless Horsemen. They were not wearing T-shirts. They had suit coat jackets on, and they were lobbying on the floor to try to get people to either manipulate the vote in some way, shape, or form on different ballots or vote for no endorsement. Finally, I talked to Tom Emmer, Congressman Tom Emmer's chief of staff, who's on leave to work with some key congressional races, the race down in the 1st District, the 8th District, and some of the other congressional candidates, David Fitzsimmons, because David has a lot of experience running statewide races, and I wanted to talk to him about the challenges that these organizations are going to have going forward on statewide races. Tim Pawlenty is very well financed, as is Tim Walz or any challengers on the DFL side. So the grassroots are really going to have to pull out all the stops to be able to compete with money when it comes to these candidates that they've either endorsed or the candidates that they're going to be running in the primaries first, and then, the actual general election in November. Okay, so let's start with some of the speeches and we'll work our way through some of the stuff I just told you we're going to talk about. Welcome to the Republican Convention for the Minnesota Republican Party in Duluth. It took a while to find everyone, but they're all here in a darkened hall where they're listening to taped speeches by candidates for the Senate. There are the lights.
Here tonight, the committee members, the legislators, volunteers, and supporters that are here today. Because of your hard work, the Republican Party in Minnesota is better, stronger, and smarter than ever before, putting us in an excellent position to defeat Tina Smith and elect a Republican to the United States Senate who will put Minnesotans first and get things done. Real Minnesotans need representation too. Not just the metro area liberal elites. The truth is, when I look at Washington, I see nothing but dysfunction, obstruction, and a partisan divide that has grown worse than ever before. If the people of Minnesota send me to Washington, I know I can get things done. We can't afford more of the status quo, and right now, that's exactly what we're getting.
We have people in the governor's race that have been running this whole time, fighting for this endorsement. So remember that tomorrow, that we got to come out of here united, not only with the senators, but with the governor candidate. We got great people, and they're here now. They're here fighting for the endorsement. So I'm Bob Anderson, and I do fight back. That's what I do. I fight back, but because I'm the dental guy, the bite back comes into hand. And that's a very popular science. So I'm Bob Anderson. I'm a lifelong Minnesota resident. I grew up in Richfield, Minnesota, which was a great community. I'm new to the Republican Party. I came because Donald J. Trump. He was somebody that inspired me. I can still be a U.S. Senator, so this is what it's about. I can attract common sense Democrats, independents, people like Donald J. Trump did, because we can't win this state with just Republicans.
Well, you know, sitting here in Mobile Podcast Command, right down below here, I've got bottled water. And I bring bottled water with me wherever I go because I do not drink tap water. I don't drink the tap water in my town. For one thing, it tastes bad to me. I don't like the taste of it. And then there's this question about possible pollution from decades ago. So toxins that are in your water can be odorless, tasteless, and colorless. If you've ever pulled the information from your town about what's in your water, you're going to be shocked. And so you probably, just like me, spend a lot of money, too much money, on bottled water. I buy two or three cases at a time at Trader Joe's. I carry it out to the car. Then I got to carry it up the stairs to get it in the kitchen. There is a solution to this. A friend of mine was telling me the other day that he can make my tap water more pure and better tasting than bottled water. Let me repeat that. My friend Joe was telling me the other day that he can make my tap water more pure and better tasting than bottled water. And that is something that I'm interested in because that makes lots of other things very affordable. Because if you add up all the cases of water over the months in the year, it turns out to be a lot of money. So here's what you do. Check out MasterPlumberMN.com, MasterPlumberMN.com, or you can click on the banner at the top of the page at the top of the BobDavisPodcasts.com. The guys at Water Butler can set you up with a water purification system that will end your dependence on bottled water forever. Call them at 763-286-8328 if you live in St. Louis Park, Rogers, Maple Grove, Edina, Plymouth, or Minnetonka, or any place you're worried about your tap water. Purify your water right from the source with the Water Butler. 68 years of experience with plumbing, 30 years of experience with water filtration systems. 763-286-8328. 763-286-8328. Click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com to learn more, or visit masterplumbermn.com. End your dependence on bottled water today. That should be a speech at this convention. End your dependence on bottled water today with Water Butler! What's also interesting is what is happening. You know, you kind of get to watch what's actually happening. So while you're watching the goings on, one of the things that's happening right now is you have the Headless Horseman from the Plenty campaign. Why do I call them Headless Horsemen? It's actually a very apt description, because the Plenty guys are not wearing shirts. And what they're doing is they're walking around pushing for either a no endorsement or more ballots, because the longer people are here, the less that they want to be here. So while that's going on, then there are little reports filtering back on the DFL convention, which is also continuing. So now they're balloting for their gubernatorial nomination. This is the big thing here. I realize that there's four statewide races: attorney general, two senators, governor. And the governor is the main reason that we're all here. In other words, at both conventions, the governor's nomination is the big ticket in this particular time frame with this state convention. But the plenty people are moving through the crowd, moving through these Senate district groups, the delegates, trying to get this no endorsement thing, which I described in a previous podcast, because if there's no endorsement, then that's the end of the so-called grassroots. So that's what's going on here right now.
Just a little background, a little more than what Tim had said. You know, the RFL started with four House members, and we thought it was going to be maybe just a little bit of fun. We're going to poke the Democrats in the eye a little bit, just have some fun. We started with, we had a couple cups and we made some videos. Within 2 days, we had a cease and desist order. When's the last time the Democrats have responded to an issue that fast for farmers or laborers? Electrician for 25 years and have served two terms in the House as a Republican, and sometimes I get some weird looks. But I spoke at an event one time, building trades, and explained to them exactly why I was a Republican. And after that event, I had six people come up to me in the hallway and whisper, "I just want you to know, I'm a Republican too."
So the RFL thing is actually an interesting wrinkle because, aside from the obvious dig at the Democrat farm labor history, and you can understand why Democrats might be offended by that. This is in keeping with this, I hate to say, but in keeping with this progressive tradition of Republicans in the state of Minnesota. Now, if you are listening to this and you live in Tennessee or Kentucky or someplace like that, or Texas, where, quote-unquote conservative Republicans act a certain way, the RFL thing is interesting. It doesn't necessarily mean conservative policy. It means that at least among a group of six or seven or four or five legislators, it's an attempt to capitalize on the farmer and the laborers in the state historically. It does kind of fit with the whole progressive history of the Republicans, though, who are not politically right or as right as the Republicans in a place like Texas or Oklahoma or even Kansas. So it's important to point out, these are interesting marketing ploys, but does it mean conservative, quote-unquote conservative, whatever that means to certain people, does it mean quote-unquote conservative votes? Because for farmers, in a lot of places, it's subsidies, and for laborers, in a lot of places, it's maintaining labor. In this state, most of the people that are laborers are actually working for state governments and county governments and local governments, which is an anathema to the Republican less government approach. So this is not a Wisconsin Scott Walker thing. It's just very interesting to point that out.
We're talking to David Fitzsimmons. What is your chief of staff for Tom, right?
Yes, Congressman Tom Emmer, but I'm on partial leave now, running his re-election campaign and campaign for Jim Hagedorn in Minnesota's 1st District, the open Tim Walz seat.
And the reason I wanted to talk to you is you're kind of the expert on the political science of a statewide race in Minnesota because of, obviously, Tom's campaign in whatever it was, 2010. So there are four statewide races here. I mean, a congressional district is one thing, but let's talk about the state overall. What kinds of challenges exist for any candidate, Democrat or Republican, when it comes to this giant state?
Well, one of the big challenges is you have to deal with a larger span of interests and people. And so, when you look at a lot of the people talk about the, in Republican circles about the what went right with the Trump performance in 2016 in Minnesota, and Trump did perform very well in a lot of places, but there were, especially in greater Minnesota, but there were places in the suburbs and some regional centers and definitely the core cities where he did much worse than is typical, even for an average Republican. So the challenge becomes, how do you try to not take the hit and do worse in those places you want to hold your own and yet get the improvement like you saw with what Trump did? And that's the thing. And you can look at some of the major issues that we deal with, whether it's mining. You know, you have some of that becomes regional, you know, divisions more than standard political divisions. And if you take a side, you may benefit from...
It might help
you up here in the 8th District to be pro-mining. Might not hurt you in the 7th or the 1st, but then all of a sudden you're going backwards in the 3rd, you know, or the 4th. And does that factor out? Does that work? And so every position becomes a yin and a yang of what you're dealing with and a cost benefit.
What kind of organization, and I'm not asking you to make a value judgment, but what kind of organization does it take for any of these statewide candidates? And do you think that they have it?
Yeah, I mean, it takes a lot, because you have to have people that are speaking positively about your campaign all across the state. And if the typical person, even if they're involved to some extent in politics, if they're county commissioner or state representative or mayor, they might have a network and a circle near and in their constituency currently.
So you still
but to expand that is hard.
Networks.
You try to continue to build them, and you try to continue to maintain them, because they go stale if you've previously had them, and if you don't have them, they're hard to come by. You know, when you have those networks, they take years to sometimes fully develop, and so if you don't have kind of some of those to utilize as a candidate, and you have to build from scratch, it's difficult, and then you have the calendar working against you. The pages flip. They're always flipping. They're always moving. And you got a countdown. And
so it's June, and then suddenly it's October.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. You know, the election seems like a long way away to the average voter. But if you're a candidate looking at what progress you have to make every single day, the timeline looks short.
How much does a campaign manager or a group of managers spend basically out just all over the state? And how much time should a candidate spend all over the state?
The candidate should spend a lot of time all over the state, but you got to be maximizing that time too. And that becomes, you know, that becomes even more difficult when you start dealing again with, the geography of the state. And especially, I think, people that live center around the Twin Cities metro area, I think it's very easy for them to forget just how large it is. You know, you're talking from the Twin Cities to International Falls or to, Grand Forks or something, you're talking 5 or 6 hours on the road. And so, you know, and that's just one way to go. So then how can you collaborate to get things there and make it an effective road trip or what have you? And how do you make a big enough impact that places that you're only going to get one time, you can leave an impression that's a positive one that actually moves the needle?
So now I am going to ask you to make a value judgment.
Yeah.
So considering the history of politics in this state, considering what you've heard here today and what we are getting filtered back from the DFL convention, orientation-wise, right to left, where should this party be?
Well, I think it's... I think sometimes even right-left descriptions can be challenging. You start dealing with what's referred to as more libertarian or liberty positions versus stronger government. So, you know, what side does that come on when you start dealing with religious issues?
Well, I hear a lot of religious stuff, and I hear a lot of Trump stuff here.
Yep.
Is that going to be calibrated right for a statewide race?
Again, I think what you're going to have to do is try to get those advantages of what Trump showed he could do in a lot of places, like CD8, like CD7, like CD1, and yet somehow mitigate those losses in places like CD3 and CD2. So,
In Rochester, the Democrats surprised everybody by nominating Aaron Murphy, state representative from St. Paul's Tony Summit District, for the governor's position. The DFL sitting attorney general backed down after an NRA endorsement was revealed, and activists seem to have been able to grab control of the DFL. Both political parties face divisive primaries in August. The big one, of course, is Tim Pawlenty against Jeff Johnson, who, as he said himself, has no money. The delegates are described as party activists in media coverage. I don't see activism here in Duluth with Republicans. I see a tired group of older people who are fond of saying things that are old and thinking about and talking about old ideas. The newest thing that they can come up with is to talk about Trump or talk up Trump or imitate Trump or sing the praises in Trump or of Trump in their speeches. To be quite honest, for more than one old hand, it was very depressing, and I had a lot of conversations about people who have served here many, many years who are handing the torch to a different group and have bittersweet feelings about the passing of the grassroots. More than one person had the feeling that this is probably going to be the last real grassroots convention in Minnesota after watching the goings-ons here. I'm not sure that's such a bad thing. These are going to be statewide races. And the other thing is, watching these people, I have to say, I am not convinced that any of the so-called Republican activists here have the organization, the experience, the fortitude, and frankly, the sophistication to run successful statewide races. As you heard David Fitzsimmons say, what goes in one district may not go in another district, and that's the part that requires the sophistication. And the primaries are going to require much of organizations, to say nothing of candidates, let alone the actual races from mid-August through to November. I heard and I see a lot of childish notions about politics. I'm not predicting a Republican or Democrat victory. I'm just saying, for a lot of these people here today, what they are going to now face, both the candidates and the people who are going to work for them, they're going to be out there alone, because most of the people here are not going to do anything. So the convention ended with a shocker from Andy Parrish, who was one of the gubernatorial candidates who bowed out in favor of support to the winner. And then suddenly Mary Giuliani, who is the candidate for governor that hails from Woodbury, the mayor of Woodbury, I guess, said out of nowhere, came up and ended the whole thing. So we're going to end with that whole little montage of Parrish to Mary to Jeff Johnson and his speech, an impassioned effort to get the grassroots to help him starting now. And that's the Min GOP convention in Duluth.
But I'm going to give you a warning. If you don't make this endorsement today, you're making a big mistake. You are going to pay for it. Thank you so much. I am not going to stop fighting for the truth and what we need to accomplish in Minnesota, because we're in big trouble. And I'm going to make sure I'm standing behind whoever's leading, making sure I inform them and continue to tell leadership, the same as I've done for 20 years, the truth about what's going on at any cost, even to my own detriment. Thank you very much.
Democrats, and I don't think they're going to come out very unified. I don't think they're going to be unified. So you've spoken, and it looks like Jeff Johnson, it's Jeff Johnson's time. Congratulations to Jeff Johnson. Madam Chair, I make a motion we cast a unanimous ballot for Jeff Johnson.
Oh, that's bad.
I have a motion. I heard a second.
Because we only have one candidate remaining in nomination, we will endorse by standing acclamation. All those in favor of endorsing Jeff Johnson as the Republican candidate for governor, please rise.
By the way, I just got to point out right here that, remember, we didn't finish the balloting. So the delegates had not finished the balloting. Nobody ever heard the third ballot results. And so suddenly they just out of nowhere, Parrish collapsed, Mary collapsed, and Jeff Johnson was the guy by acclamation. So for all the people to talk about grassroots and for all the people to talk about activism while the heavy rock music plays, where was the activism to insist on going through the resolutions and to insist on finishing this thing up through the balloting? This is what I mean when I say the grassroots in Minnesota doesn't have any more passion and basically is dead. Basically, what it was a vote for Jeff Johnson in any way, shape, or form is a vote to go home. And so all of the fire-breathing activists just wanted to go.
Thank you all for putting your faith in Donna and me. We truly, truly honor your endorsement. This endorsement still means something, and we are so thankful that you stuck this out and are giving us this honor. So we really appreciate that. So now it is time to defend this endorsement. And that starts tomorrow. And, you know, we have a primary in front of us. We all know that. And we could whine and cry about it, but instead I would rather just go win it. So that is the plan. So I'm going to ask for something from you. Actually, I'm going to ask for a bunch of things from you before I close out, because we really need your help. That battle starts this afternoon, not even tomorrow, but this afternoon. And I know on your way out, they're already starting to set things up. You're going to get a little baggy if you'll take it with a bumper sticker and some other things to get the word out, because we are going to rely on you. We're going to get outspent. We are going to rely on you to help get that word out. There are going to be lawn signs out there. Please take one, or don't take 10 or 20. We don't have enough, but take one or two and put them in your, one in your yard and one in the best other yard you got, and then I hate asking for money at this point, but on the way out, if you can throw in a $20 bill or write a check for $50 or $100 or whatever you can, again, we are going to get outspent by plenty in the primary, but as long as I have enough to get a simple message out to Minnesota Republicans, we will win this race on August 14th. And that is important. It is very important that we win this primary, not just because it's not just about picking the strongest candidate. It is about that, but it's not just about that. I believe that this primary is about the heart and soul of the Republican Party. This primary will determine who controls the Minnesota GOP going forward. Are we just like the DFL, controlled by the wealthiest donors and political professionals, where the endorsement is essentially irrelevant? Or is our party controlled by you and grassroots Republicans on the ground all over the state like you, who pound in the lawn signs and knock on the doors and give $25 or $50 contributions and walk in parades? That's what this primary is about. And you know what? I got my money on you. So let's keep this party in the hands of the grassroots and let us go win this thing. Thank you all so much.
And of course, I heard a lot of talk about trade protection today at this convention. You know, it's something Republicans seem to be very comfortable with. Who, Republicans are used to be free traders, because it is in the news with all the talk about foreign manufacturing and Trump's reaction, slapping tariffs on the Chinese and so forth. NAFTA companies have got to be hedging their bets and preparing to bring some of their manufacturing back to the United States. If this is you, if you are reshoring, think about Depot Star, American design, engineering, and manufacturing. manufacturing right here in Minnesota. Visit DepoStar at DepoStar.com. That's DepoStar.com. DepoStar.com. Appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter and donations for Mobile Podcast Command. Sue Salomon, thanks for your $25. It went right in the tank. And I really, really, really appreciate all of the listening to the Bob Davis Podcast offline at the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Google Play, and more. Thanks for listening to Podcast 728, the Bob Davis Podcast. I'm tired. I'm packing this thing up, and I'm heading back to the Twin Cities.
The legend lives on from the Chippewa on down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. The lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. That good ship and true was a bone to be chewed when the gales of November came early. The ship was the pride of the American side, coming back from some mill in Wisconsin. As the big freighters go, it was bigger than most, with a crew and good captain well seasoned, concluding some terms with a couple of steel firms when they left fully loaded for Cleveland. Then later that night when the ship's bell rang, could it be the North Wind?